I'm a bit nervous this morning. I think it's because this is such a topic so dear to my heart. So thank you for hanging in there with me while we wade through the deep waters of our metacrisis. Or what a recent book I read called Our Derangement. It sounds about right to me. Jane Goodall succinctly describes our derangement in her final interview this recent September, when she said, "We differ from other animals mostly by the development of our intellect. We are by far the most intellectual, the most brilliant creatures on the planet. But we aren't the most intelligent, because intelligent creatures don't destroy their only home." Investigating the inner work for co-creating a world where we all can thrive has been a fairly rigorous uphill climb so far, at least for me. Maybe for you too. So I hope today we can find a bit of ledge on the journey, sit down, take a few breaths, look out over the landscape, and survey our proper place in the world. For so many of us, nature is a retreat to reset our nervous systems, a sacred space of communion. I think this is especially true for us Mainers, whether we're born here or arrived here from somewhere else to find our forever home. As I hike the woods or sit by the bay, I've begun to feel the possibility of a deeper relationship with the non-human world. And I say possibility because at the same time I notice just how entrenched I am, how conditioned we all are to think of humans as being somehow exceptional, the highest pinnacle of evolution. I started wondering about the subtle, barely conscious ways I'm assuming my human supremacy in this measureless and diverse world. Which led me to realize how I've given precedence to my mind's capacities so far in this series, a particularly human mode of making meaning, but certainly not the only one. As Jane Goodall said, we may be the most intellectual creatures, but not the most intelligent. So my caveat today is this: I get the paradox and the irony of talking about nature when what I believe we should be doing is relating with nature. As anyone who spent time in wild places knows, once we get out of our mental constructs, our other senses heighten, and we find ourselves not just closer to others, but to all life. So how do we encourage ourselves and others to live from this awareness of our relatedness to the natural world? How do we become active participants in a larger earth-centered process of transformation and co-creation? Because the co in co-creating means so much more than talking with other humans. I think most of us have at least a subliminal sense of this non-separation. And some of us may have had transpersonal experiences revealing the earth as an intelligent, conscious entity. This despite the fact that if we went to any typical public or private school in the Western Hemisphere, we were taught that everything, but particularly what we did not know, those unknown wild spaces, must be quantified, categorized, mapped, and analyzed. We're just so used to naming and differentiating that for most of us, we've lost that primal, visceral, felt sense of the threads of Indra's net, the web of being surrounding and including us. But labels are not the essence of things. We vitally need wild, unassigned places. In a world that's facing the consequences of its own addiction to personal comfort over community health, profit over care, access to that over which we have no control is essential to maintaining our attunement to the greater rhythms of the world around us. Time in wild spaces is our circulatory system, our lifeblood and bond with the interconnected web. Gregory Bateson, who wrote Steps to an Ecology of Mind in 1972, summed it up this way. He said, "The major problems in the world are the result of the difference between how nature works and the way people think." I was rereading Bateson recently, and I'm amazed at how long we've known this and how little we've changed. So that writing today, Vanessa Andreotti can say, "We tend to legitimate what makes sense in articulated meaning, what we can understand through chains of words. As a result, a whole world of unsayable possibilities is dismissed as meaningless." So in the same way, we're just at the beginning baby stages of understanding how quantum physics changes our perception and responses to the world, we're still taking just the first baby steps into understanding a world designed by the interconnected and intervulnerable kinships of deep ecology, a world whose being relates to each other without words. And yet, because here we are, even being a thinking, doing person seems to be a part of the world we live in. It's a gift. It's not something to judge. It's only the layer upon layer of acculturation that keeps us from right relationship with the web. We humans have never not been creatures connected to earth and tree and sky. It's just that we will never think our way out of the mess we're in without reacquainting ourselves with our creaturely ways. This is the great mystery, that our sense of community, our sense of belonging and purpose is to be found in the great confluence of relationship with all beings. Loosening our human dominance over nature then seems a vital prerequisite to the process of coming home, home to our true nature and home to the rest of the world, and an essential first step to creating positive, lasting change. David Abrams wrote a profound book called Becoming Animal. And in it, he wrote, "While persons brought up within literate culture often speak about the natural world, indigenous oral peoples sometimes speak directly to that world, acknowledging animals, plants, and even landforms as expressive subjects with whom they might find themselves in conversation." He continued later in the book, thank you, "How monotonous our speaking becomes when we speak only to ourselves, and how insulting to the other beings that no longer sense us talking to them, but only about them, as though they were not present in our world. Yet if we no longer call out to the moon slipping through the clouds, or whisper to the spider setting the silken struts of her web, well, then the numerous powers of this world will no longer address us. And if they still try, we will not likely hear them. What I long for is to more intimately align my whole being with how nature works, with the interconnected web of being that is a foundational you principle. So I keep asking myself over and over, what does it actually take to live from and within this understanding? Interdependence, as depicted by Indra's net, that beautiful story that Bob read, means there is no center. There is no hierarchy. We're all in it together, depending on one another, we being everything in the universe without an it. To repeat an earlier quote by Joshua Schrey, there is no outside. Consciousness is. All things transpire in consciousness. Which I admit can sound pretty out there, but I'm leaning on Joshua Schrey today because I love his ability to bring us from that all things are consciousness place into a felt sense of this deeper reality. And he uses the great example of rocks. I love rocks, especially granite. I think we all have a place in our heart for granite. Who hasn't picked up a perfect rock off the beach? And over the course of my life, I've come to view rocks differently. Schrey again, he writes, rocks, those inanimate, in quotes, minerals move on timescales too slow for us to notice. They are forged in the fiery belly of the earth, eroded by rivers, compressed into crystals, and scattered as dust to feed ecosystems. They breathe, metabolize, and transform, just not in a way that fits into our tidy definitions of life or our limited experience of time. We need to get off our exceptionalism pedestal urgently. We need to heal our addiction to the supremacy of our thinking minds. We need to give up the myth that we are walking on the earth rather than we are the earth. So maybe it's not a paradox. There's not a paradox embedded in this talk and in our conversation. Maybe we're the earth thinking out loud. The longing to belong can be fundamentally eased and healed by our growing intimacy with the web of life. At my finest, at my most holy, I am able to meet the other than and more than human world heartbeat to heartbeat. Soul to soul. At my most open and vulnerable, I realize I am being breathed just as much as I am breathing. I believe the life's work of people on this planet at this time is developing or refinding, remembering that deep felt sense that we are truly one jewel in a vast net. Sarah McFarland, in her book, The Crisis and the Call, writes that our soul's work is, quote, to be able to listen and respond, and able, when someone plucks one of the threads of the web, to hear the tone that emerges. And Sherry Mitchell, whom we know, writes, the hour is demanding that our species move away from the distraction of our own self-interest and turn our attention back toward a collective view where we can honestly contemplate the interests of all living beings and the living earth herself. I think we're in a moment in this long dark when we are being forcibly re-entangled with Indra's net, with the interconnected web of being on a planetary scale. And I use forcefully on purpose because things are getting to a point where it's kind of a do or die moment. It's the metamorphosis taking place during our time in the cocoon. This is it. The conditioned illusion of the segregated self is being dismantled. And the intimate link between all beings is being remembered. We are being reunited with the body of the earth. And this is a humbling experience. And the best news my heart carries into a possible new age. Vanessa Andreotti wrote a landmark poem. It's very long. It's called Landing with the Land Differently, An Invitation. And I'm going to read just a short excerpt from it, but I highly recommend you looking this up. The land does not need our permission to speak. It speaks in soil and stone. It speaks in wind and water. It speaks in static and signal in the interference that jolts us awake. And the land is a yapper. It is singing, laughing, crying, screaming, and if you have not noticed yet, kicking our ass. So now, pause. Not to consume these words, not to agree or disagree, but to sit with what this invitation might cost you. Not in theory, but in embodiment and in relationship. May we accept the daily invitation that the world is offering us. May we join the conversation. May it be so, and amen.